Okay. So, what did you notice about this story, right? If you try reading it through, right, what do we notice just about the flow of the Korach story?
It's disjointed.
It's disjointed, right? It's very, very, very choppy. Also, how many groups are there, right? How many groups, right? If you were writing this as a play, right? Let's think of it as a play, right, or as a movie, right? You were just putting the introduction. You know, how many groups are we interacting with here?
Mainly three.
Who are the three?
Moshe and Aaron, Dathan and Abiram, and Korach and 250 folks.
So that, I think, if we go with that, we'll be a little bit more confused, because if we're honest, it's a bit more than that, right? I mean, that's Moshe and Aaron is definitely one group, right? Dathan and Abiram is definitely a second group, right? But Korach and his men, this is a bit complicated, because who are Korach's men? Well, that's the problem, and this is the key to the story, is that you don't know where Korach is, right? So let's see who we do know, right? We know there's Moshe and Aaron, that's one group. We know Dathan and Abiram is a second group, right? We know that there are the 250 people, and we know that among those 250 people, there are Leviim, right? That's four groups, and Korach is somewhere here, right? But it's not entirely clear where he is. And if you read the story, the story gets very confusing, because if you try to read it as one narrative, it doesn't work, right? Right? You start reading it, and Moshe is talking to Korach, Dathan, Abiram, 250 people. A few seconds later, he's talking to 250 people, and then he's talking to Leviim. We don't know who these Leviim are, right? And then he's talking to Dathan, Abiram, and then he's talking, right? Then, right, he brings everybody together. Then, right, Korach and Dathan and Abiram are dying, and then the whole Eidah is there, right? Who are these Eidah? Is it the 250 people, or is it other Jews, right? We don't even, like, the story seems to be jumping around, but that's really on purpose, because it's not jumping around. You have to think about the story like a movie, right? And you have to think about the camera sort of, you're looking at simultaneous stories that are unfolding and all sort of culminating at a specific moment. But the key to the story is going to be figuring out, okay, well, what is it about Korach? Right? What exactly is Korach doing in this story? Because Korach is the one element in the story that, on the one hand, you can't pin down where he is, on the other hand, he seems to be absolutely everywhere, right? So that's what I want to try to analyze, is what is going on in this story. So here's source sheets. Right. Okay. So, to make things easy, I gave you a chart from Rei Litag, which divides the psukim, right, very carefully, just so you can see exactly what we're doing here. But the key is going to be, if I asked you before we even read the psukim, what is Korach doing in this story, right? What is Korach doing, basically?
He's causing uproar.
Right. Or even more than just an uproar. What is he? What is his end goal?
Equality.
Not really.
Equality.
What? A coup. I mean, Korach wants a coup, right? We have to distinguish here between what is being said and what the end goal here is. Between Dathan and Abiram and the 250 people, they want a coup of both the religious and the political leadership, right? It's clear. Dathan and Abiram are very clear. They don't want Moshe to be the leader. Right? They have a problem with Moshe. Yeah.
I don't think they want a leader.
Meaning they want to overthrow the leader.
People.
They want to, well...
Well, they said that in the fourth book.
Who says that? This is where we have to be careful, is that there's multiple voices going on. There are people who want to overthrow the religious leadership, right? You're right. They don't want to be leaders. They want to overthrow the leadership, meaning they want, right, they want...
I think the initial complaint is everyone goes forth and they gather from tomorrow.
So here's what's unclear, is that some people are saying that. We have to be very careful, because not everybody is saying that. Dathan and Abiram are very specifically not saying that. They're not even there. We'll find out. Dathan and Abiram are at home, right? They're not there during that part of it. They don't care, right? They just want Moshe out. Mm-hmm. The 250 people want Aaron out, right? What does Korach want? So if you ever study political history, any successful coup, right, any successful political coup, What does the leader, right, the who's going to overthrow the current leadership, need to do if he wants to be successful? Yeah.
He learned from Turkey to kidnap the president first.
Sure, he can kidnap the president first. What does he need to do to maintain power? Yeah.
Establish support.
How do you establish support? How do you get followers?
Convince them that the current leadership is wrong, is evil, is detrimental to society.
Well, you don't even need to go that far, but convince them that leadership will be better under you. But there's a key. Any successful leader, what does any successful leader need to have to maintain support? Or what's better? The broader the support you have, the more powerful you are. How do you get broader support? You appeal to everybody. You offer different people things. You create a coalition, right? You create a coalition. And what seems to be happening is that the key to this whole story is Korach. Korach is creating a coalition for the coup, but there are different groups here. And that's why it's confusing, because the only unifying thing here is Korach. So let's read the Psukim and just watch how this happens. Right? So, Vayikach Korach. Right, so first of all, first words, Vayikach Korach, what do those words mean? What did Korach take? The Torah doesn't tell you, right? Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Gad ben Levi, Vezahan v'Aram ben Eliyav, V'on ben Pel ben Eruvain. What did Korach take? So we don't know, right? Rashi already picks up on this, right? Rashi says, Vayikach Korach, either Lakach et atzmo l'tzad achad, L'chiot nechlach mitoch ha'ida lo rer alakuna, right? Either he took himself aside, right? The fundamental act of Lekicha is simply that he removed himself from the group, right? Then Lore al Kuhunad. If you skip down Davar Acher, Vayikach Korach Mashach Rashei Sanhedrin Shebehem Bidvarim. Or he persuaded the heads of the Sanhedrins verbally. Right? What are the two points that Rashi is making? There are two things he does. Right? One is he persuades people. The other thing is he sets himself apart. Right? Those are the two things that are happening here to understand this story. So now, the first four psukim are an introduction. Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, v'anashim b'nei Yisrael, chamishim matayim nisiei dakruei mo'ed anshei sheim. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aron, vayomru alehem rav lochem ki chol ha'ida kulam kedoshim uvetocham Adonai, umadua titnasu al kahal Adonai. So they turn to Moshe and Aaron. They say, you have too much. Everyone's holy. Why are you overlording? Why are you exalting yourself over the Kal Hashem? Until here, right, this is somewhat generic, right? Into this, you can read, to some extent, both critiques, right? This is how any good coup starts, right? You get get everyone together over one basic opposition to the current leadership. We haven't yet explained exactly what's going on, but Korach's introduction is that everybody is opposed to the current Moshe Aaron setup. Vayishma Moshe, vayipol panav, and Moshe falls on his face. Okay. But now, if you want to solve a coalition crisis, right, what do? Right? How is someone going to maintain power when being faced by a coup? What do you need to do? How? You have two choices.
Compromise.
I don't mean in terms of that. How do you, right? How do you attack the group? You have two ways. Either.
You question why they're following the person.
And how do you do that?
Attack leader.
You make the leader look weak.
So either you attack the whole movement straight on, right? Either by the leadership, or you attack all the people, or the other option is, if someone is gaining support against you by creating a coalition, what's the best way to diffuse the situation?
Create
your coalition, but that's dangerous, because then it's coalition against coalition. You have an easier way. You could kill a leader. We're going to do that, but right? What else do you need to do?
You kill everyone.
The coalition that you're
How? By breaking up the coalition, right? You could attack them all together, either by killing them or by persuading them, right? But you can attack them as a group, or you can attack them as individual groups, right? I mean, if the power is coming because a coalition has been created, the best way to defuse the situation is, first of all, by breaking up the coalition. Because remember, in a coalition, right, why is it that as soon as rebellions are over, the leader then goes and kills a lot of the people who helped him get into power? Because those people don't necessarily have the same interests as him or as each other, right? They all are against the current leadership, so they'll help overthrow the leader. But once you win, right, it becomes clear again that there are multiple groups that don't actually agree with each other. If you can make that clear now, they lose their power. So Moshe responds to multiple groups exactly in this way. So from Pasuk Hey the Yud Aleph, he turns to the religious, those who are challenging religious leadership, and then within that group, he divides that group into two groups. Right, so what does he do? First, he says, "Vaydaber al Korach l'chadat olemar boker v'yodad and I and Asher lo ben Hakadosh v'yikrive love." Then Asher charbo yikrave love. Look, in the morning, fine. You want to challenge religious leadership? Here's a test. Come back tomorrow morning. Zodasu kulachem machtor korach l'chadat. Go get yourselves the fire pans, tenuva and eish v'simu v'elain k'toret lefnei adonai machar v'ya eish Asher char adonai hu Hakadosh rav lochem b'nei Levi. Right, and he said, "Go and get your k'toret." Right. And you'll test. Now, first of all, what have you just done? Before Rav Lacham ben Levi, what have you just done to the coalition? You split them up. You've taken those who are challenging the religious leadership, you've separated them from the other group, and, even better, what else have you done?
Compromised.
You haven't compromised. Well, you have compromised. And then you've done something even better. How did you compromise? What did you do?
I challenged them.
Yeah, you challenged them. You bought yourself time. You bought yourself 24 hours, right? You, A, divide them off, but you also keep them busy for 24 hours. Then what does Moshe do very cleverly? He turns to 250 people, and then he notes that there are really two groups within the 250. Who are they?
The Levium
and non-Levium. Non-Levium, right, want, they're both claiming they want equality, but there's a problem. Why?
Non-Levium don't know what they want.
No, non-Levium can claim legitimately they want equality. The Levium can't because they've already been superior and they haven't yet complained. Right, so he's dividing the 250. So he turns to the Levium within the group to break up the coalition, the religious coalition, the part of the coalition, right? That part of the coalition break them into two factions, right? Vayomer, so he says, Vayomer Moshe al Korach Shemuna bnei Levi Hamaat mikem givdil lehi Israel etchem et Israel akriv etchem elav lavod avodat mishkan adonai v'lamod lefnei adel l'shartam. Is it not enough that you have power? Meaning, it's not about equality, right? You want more than everybody else. But you already had more, so you're not about equality. So he's now taken the religious leadership, kept them busy for 24 hours, and divides them between those who actually want equality and those who just want more power. Right? He's begun creating friction within that group. Right? You're already better than everybody else. You didn't complain until now, but you want kahuna. Right? Well, that's what they want, right? They're challenging Aaron.
They want Aaron and Moshe out.
Right, by saying that we're all holy and Aaron can't do it, they want to be all priests, right? They want to be all holy. Or, in other words, they want to be a Mamlechet Kohanim, literally, right? Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh, but meaning not in like the generic sense. They all want to be Kohanim.
Yeah, everyone
and,
does,
though.
The difference is they're at a more exalted place getting to that goal. It seems like even the other people who aren't Levium want to get to that goal.
Right, but that's a different claim because their original claim was, we want equality. Why are you lording over us? But, right, you can't legitimately say that if you spent the last few months being lording over other people, right? You can't do that. Right? That doesn't work very well. You start creating friction when you realize, right, that some of the people creating equality, right, begging for equality.
The people down here and the people up here ultimately want to get to some plateau here. They're still trying to get to the same plateau.
No. They want equality. That's not what they said. That's the problem. Is you're right. That's what Moshe's picking up on.
That plateau up here is
for sure. No, for sure. Moshe is recognizing what they really want is to be up here, but that's not what they said, right? If you want to start breaking, they didn't say that. They say they want equality. They didn't say they want to be up here.
They want this line to be the new simple.
That's not what they said. They didn't want anybody to be above anybody else. Right, the fact that they want the line up here, fine. But the fact is that those Levium didn't complain when they were above other people before.
I understand that.
But that already creates friction within the group, which is what you want to do if you want to diffuse it. That's exactly what he's getting at.
Once they get to that line, there's no one above. Everyone
for sure. But that Moshe doesn't have to. Moshe's not arguing about what their end goal should be. He's trying to break up the coalition, right? So he's pointing out that there's a problem within them. Okay. And then he continues. Right? He says, pause, right? We've now frozen that group. We've given them something to do for 24 hours, right? Now we switch, right? The camera switches. Storyline 2, right? So now they turn to those who are challenging the political leadership, and they say, We're not coming. They're also extremely cynical. Right? We're not coming up. You already took us out. Right? Right? It's right, it's a play on words, right? We're not coming to you because we've already come up to death. Right? We were supposed to go up into Israel and said we've come out of it, the chosen land, right, the promised land, into this hell of a desert. Right? We're not coming up. So he said, don't listen to them. Don't listen to their tefillah, their karbanot. I haven't taken anything from them. And now he turns back to Korach and the group, and he says, be there tomorrow. He turns back to that story, right? He's getting nowhere with the political leadership, so he just says, forget you, right? Turns back to the first group and gives them the details of the test. Pasuk Yutet. Then something gets very dangerous. And now the whole Eidah gathers. And God appears. Why does God appear right here? Who is the Eidah? Two possibilities. Either the 250 or?
Everybody.
How do you know it's everybody? Because you find out later in the Pesukim that it has to be everybody. Right? Because, right, Vaidaber Adonai Moshe v'Aaron le'mor, hibadlu mitoch ha'edah hazot v'chalem otam garega, separate from the Eidah, and I'll destroy all of them, right? Moshe challenges, v'yiplu opinahem v'yomru, el Elohei aruchol l'chol basara, ish echad yechatav al kol ha'edah tiktob, you're going to get angry at everybody because of one person, and Hashem accepts it, Vaidaber Adonai Moshe le'mor, daber le'edah le'mor, he'alu misavid, l'mishkan korach v'adatan v'abiram, so he says, separate, and you won't die, but the 250 people do die, so they must not be the Eidah, because the Eidah gets saved. So this is all of Klal Yisrael. Why, at this moment, does Hashem appear? Because if Korach is creating coalition, to rebel, it's one thing if it's 253 people. When does it get dangerous? If it's everybody, right? Korach is gathering everybody, right? He has the whole, right, he's getting the crowds all riled up, and everybody's coming to watch. At that point, Hashem has to intervene, because if it's overflowing, right, he says, no, I'll destroy them. And then Moshe says something. Yeah?
No, no.
Then Moshe says, what does Moshe say? Ha'ish echad yechata, one person should sin. Right? Is it one person?
No.
No. How many people? Yeah?
And I guess that's my problem, is we've just, in like the last, whatever, couple months, we've read about the Eagles of Zahav, about the Meraglim. Those weren't everyone sinning. It was 12 people, maybe the Eagle of Zahav.
No, the Meraglim wasn't. That was exactly the point. It was 12 who riled up the whole nation.
So that's, why doesn't he use that same excuse, that same line over there, instead of the whole, firstly the
So here's the key. So there's two ways of reading Ish Echad. So what is Ish Echad? So either you say it's metaphorical. It's, you know, a few people, right? But it's probably not. What does Ish Echad sound like? Who's Ish Echad?
Korach.
Why is this different from all the other stories? Because it's a coalition. People have complained before, but it didn't threaten the entirety of the leadership because no one brought all the complaints together as an organized coup. That's what made it dangerous. Was one person. It wasn't the individual complaints. Individual complaints, you're right, that wouldn't be enough to destroy all of Klal Yisrael. The only thing that could is if you have one rebel leader who manages to get all the factions together and challenge the entirety of the current leadership structure. It's literally Ish Echad Yecheta, because all the individual sins are not that important compared to the fact that it's all coalescing against an outright coup. Right? Yeah.
Maybe to get at the humbleness of Moshe, but I'm trying to figure out how to word it better. But I think it's more shocking is that this is a coup against Moshe's leadership, but all the other things were coups against Hashem's authority.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Yes, and it makes it more insidious.
Yeah.
But I'll show you why in just a minute. We're going to get there. But Ish Echad Yechata seems to mean literally. Okay, now think movie. Okay, we've set all the pieces in motion, and now it's the last scene. So far, we've been meeting people at different points. Now, what happens? How does the movie have to end?
Someone has to die.
That's going to happen. Also, where does everybody have to be at the end of the movie? At the same place, right? Multiple storylines have been happening, and now they've got to gather, and that's about what's going to happen right now, right? So now he says. Pasuk Chav Gimel, right? They start getting together. Vayidaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Daber Leida Lemor, Ayalu Misaviv Mishkan Korach Datan VeYaviram. The nation, get away. So, you have the nation. They're surrounding, but they're not in the group. Vayakam Moshe VeYelech Al Datan VeYaviram VeYelchu Acharav Zeknei Yisrael. Now Moshe gets his coalition, the leaders, and he gets Datan VeYaviram. Vayidaber El Haida Lemor, Suru Na Me'al Aleha Nashim HaRishayim Ha'ilav Al Tigu B'chol Asher Lohem. And he says, don't right, leave these evil people. Don't get swallowed up with them. Because you'll get swallowed up. Right, break the right. Prevent anyone not in the actual rebellion from getting caught up. So Datam and Aviram are standing there with their families. Vayomer Moshe, and Moshe says, "Bizot teidun ki Hashem shalachani lasod kol masimo eilek ki lo milibi." You will know through this that I was sent by God, it's not my own, right? Not from my own heart. Im kimot kol adam yimutun eilef kudat kol adam yipaket aleihem lo Adonai shalachani. If they die in a normal way, it wasn't me. It was me, not God. But, vimbriya yivra Adonai v'atzufatzta adama et pi avala utam et kol asher lehem v'yardu chayim sha'ola v'yedatem ki na'atzu an Hashem v'ele et Adonai. But if the earth opens its mouth, right, a new creation, it opens its mouth and swallows them alive and they go straight to hell, so then you'll know, or the grave, however you want to translate Sheol, right, then you'll know that they were challenging God. When he finished speaking, the earth split. And the earth opens its mouth, and it swallows them. And all the people, and everything Korach owns, is swallowed up. Back to your point, right? Okay. Back to, why is this so insidious? So why this punishment? The key, I think, is in this punishment. Why this punishment?
They open their mouths, so like, the ground opens its mouth.
Close, right? I mean, I think that's part of it, but I think there's an even more sharp point, which the Pesukim can make it explicitly. How are they destroying it?
Confirms, like Hashem chose Moshe.
How does it confirm it?
They just feel like it's, they tried to divide up.
Supernatural.
Ah, so here, this is a brilliant note that I saw in Aviva Zornberg's book on Moshe. It's brilliant, though. Read the Pesukim carefully. Vayhi kechaloto ledaber. When he stops talking, then? Vatiftach haaretz et piyah. What does that mean? Right? What's the imagery?
When
Moshe closes his mouth, the earth opens its mouth. Why?
It's almost implying that, like, based on what Moshe said, this is happening. It's like showing the direct.
And why? And here we have to remember something carefully. How did Moshe's story begin? He turns to God and he says, "Bnei Yisrael won't believe me that I'm your messenger. I'm Arel Svatayim. I can't talk. I don't know how to communicate." And what does Hashem say to him? Mi samper le'adam, ani ehya impicha. Right? Those are not the same pasuk. Different pasukim, right? Who created man's mouth? Don't worry, I will be with your mouth. Meaning, the entire journey Moshe has been predicated on the belief that people had that he spoke in the name of God. And for the first time, someone created a coalition that called into question everything he said since the beginning. It was Moshe's worst fear that everything he said, they would question that it was from his own heart and not from God. So what does he say? If you were with my mouth, and they don't believe that, when I close my mouth, you open yours. Right? You have the earth. open its mouth, right? Prove that I was communicating from God. Vatiftach ha'aretz et piha. So Korach's group gets swallowed up. That's scene one. But remember, now they're all standing in the same place. What happens at that moment? V'chol Yisrael sh'er sivot dehem nasu l'kolam kemru pezilein aretz. Klal Yisrael is convinced, and they run away. You've now prevented it from spreading beyond the original coalition. And the fire comes down and swallows the 250 people, right? All culminates, right? All the scenes happen at the same moment. And there's only one problem. There's one person who we don't know where he was. Korach. Tell me where Korach was. We don't know. It doesn't ever say his name. We go to his place. We know his property is swallowed up. But he never says that he was there. So Chazal say, to Gemara number 3, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Korach lo min habluim v'lo min hasrufin. He was from neither group. Right? Lo min habluim d'chdiv et kol adam asher l'korach v'lo korach. V'lo min hasrufin d'chdiv ba'achol ha'eshet chamishim v'atayim ish v'lo korach. It's the 250 and Datan Avram and their people, but not Korach himself. B'masnisa Tana, Korach min hasrufin u'min habluim. Alternatively, he was from both. But what's the point? What's, right? Min habluim d'chdiv v'atibla otam v'et Korach, min hasrufin d'chdiv eish ha'samed Hashem v'tochal ha'chamishim v'atayim ish v'korach b'hadayu. Right? So Chazal note that Korach isn't in either group. So either that means he's in neither group or he's in both groups. That ambiguity is Korach. Is he's neither in either group, but he's also in both groups. That's what Chazal are telling you, right? Is he is not only min habluim, he's not only min hasrufim, he's not really from either one, or he's from both of them. The point is that what made him powerful was he created a coalition of people who were arguing about different things. The only thing that brought them together was Korach. And the only thing you needed to do to end it was pull apart the coalition and then get rid of Korach, and then everything would be solved. Right? Let me just summarize this. So what Moshe did, right, is there's, I call it the Machiavellian Korach, right? It's Korach is doing everything he needs to get in power. How do you get in power? Build a coalition of disparate interests who the only thing they agree on is that the current leadership shouldn't have power, and then the rule is, who gets power when the current leadership falls? Whoever is there to grab power, right? That's how things happen, right? Moshe responds by separating the coalition and making sure that it's clear that they're not working together. Then he divides within the groups, right? Make sure it doesn't spread beyond the group, brings them all together for the theatrical finale, makes a symbolic point that undermines the entire rebellion from beginning to end. Right, because in the end of the day, what it challenged was that his message was true, and when he has nothing left to say, he turns to God and says, "Vatiftach ha'aretz et piha." If I have nothing left to say, I've done everything I can. I've separated the group. I've contained it all, but now I need you to prove that my leadership was based on exactly what I said it was, which was you. And if I have nothing left to say, so then you open your mouth and prove that you were with, right, that you were in. You were with my mouth, like you said, all the way back there in Shmot. And that's what makes Korach so insidious, and that's why Moshe has to pull it apart. And that's why the story doesn't flow, because it's not one story. Korach created a coalition against Moshe, and Moshe, to save himself, to save his mission, had to divide them all up, identify the different factions, respond to each of them in kind, and then bring it together in a symbolic way to assert his power and prove that which gave him power to begin with should continue to give him power now. And that's what brings the whole story together. The problem, right, is, right, as we noted, very few people die here. When do a lot of people die? Right after this. Because Moshe thought he solved the whole problem. He separated the group. He prevented it from overflowing. But Vayilonu kol adat bnei Yisrael mimacharata Moshe ve'aron le'mor atem amitem et am Hashem. They still don't believe it. They still say it's not God, it's Moshe. Right? They still challenge that Moshe is the true conduit to God. And when after all of that happens, That's when it's not just the 253 people who get killed. That's when 14,000 plus get killed, because then it spilled over into the entire of the nation, right? And that's the tragic story of Korach, is Moshe brings the whole movie together to this finale, and you think he's got it, and you think he's proved his point, and he's broken up the coalition, and he's proved that he's the authentic leader, he deserves to continue in power, and then it all falls apart because some of those, right, some of those complaints, some of that unhappiness with his leadership remains, and it becomes a mass, right, rebellion. And that's when Hashem has to intervene and punish the entirety of the nation, right? Not just a symbolic group, but a very significant portion of the nation, because otherwise it's going to metastasize and it'll be everybody, right? And that's what he has to prevent. And the answer, now, why does it happen now? But why does it happen now? And it's obvious, right? Why does this happen now?
Because they were just told they're all going to die.
Yeah, there's no hope, right? 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 As hard as he's going to try, in the end of the day, what prevents this from, what prevents them from really internalizing it and being calm with it is that Dustin Aviram really got it right, right? Not like objectively right. They got it emotionally right, right? The problem is you brought us into the Midbar to die, and now we've been sentenced to death. And now what do we have to lose to rebel? Right, you can prove that you represent God, but we don't want you to represent God because that means we're really all going to die, right? I'll just end with this, right? Right, this really is, right? Then, you know, they have a proof, right? Again, that no, we really, 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 we mean it when we say we represent God, and at some point it clicks, right? If you go to the end of Perek Yud Zayin, right? The last two psukim are the last words we ever hear from Bnei Yisrael. The first generation dies after that pasuk. It's silence. And what are the last things they say? When they finally internalize that Moshe truly represents them and therefore he's right, is it's tragic. Vayomru Bnei Yisrael Moshe lemor hein gavadnu avadnu kulanu avadnu. Right? We've expired. We're dying. We're lost. We're all lost. Kol hakarev. Anyone who comes to the Mishkan is going to die. Have we ceased dying? That's the last words we hear from them. Because the answer is, Hayim tamnu lagvoa? No. Right? They are sentenced to death. There is no going back. Right? But they're fighting against their imminent death. Right? That's why they still rebel, even after this miraculous finish. Because the miraculous finish proved that Moshe is the leader and represents God, but if he represents God, then they're going to die. And when he has, so when they get punished, and then he has another proof, and it finally sinks in, then they give up. It's not a encouraging, we're going behind Moshe, it's, there's nothing left to do. Heng avadnu, avadnu, kulanu, right? Kulanu, avadnu, there's nothing left. We're going to follow Moshe, not to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to follow him to our death. But he is the legitimate leader, and there's nothing left to say. And this is literally the last thing we hear from them, because we don't realize that. But if you look after it, right, Perek Yud Chet, nobody's talking, right? Parshas Chukas, right, we get the Parah Aduma, right? And then Perek Chaf is the next time the narrative picks up, and we're in year 40, right? Those were the last words we heard from them, was when it finally sunk in, yeah, Moshe represents God, but if Moshe represents God, then we have no hope. And when they end up following Moshe, it ends up being tragic. It's not like an exuberant, like, oh, we're following Moshe. It's, right, he's right. And if he's right, then his message from God that you will die in this Midbar is true. Right? And they stop rebelling because there's no point. Because, right, they sinned and they have to suffer the consequences, but it's not worth fighting against it anymore. So that's sort of the tragic end to the Korach story, but you see why this is happening now and how it's happening and how Moshe is responding and Hashem is giving him the tools to respond to it. Okay, yeah, and then we'll finish.
I'm going to preface my comment. I'm a Levi.
So am I. Okay.
This is why my comment's so interesting, I think. Or, I mean, it has a personal touch to it, but...
I'm going to tell my wife that I'm going to stay for late, Marv. Yeah.
So my question is, if they were going to die anyways, why is the punishment death? The Levium got their right from standing up when Moshe said Mila Shemalai for that regard after the Egel Azov. So if it's the Levium going against because of leadership, shouldn't they lose their ability of leadership. Why death as a punishment when death was imminent?
Well, for the Levim, it really isn't, right? The Levim are not going to die, right? So.
Well, the Levim that were part of it.
Well, these Levim are going to die, yeah.
The whole idea is that death was imminent within the congregation. So why was...
Well, imminent is 40 years. That's not so short. Not when lifespans are like 45 years. Right? I mean, the average lifespan is 45 years. Saying you're going to die in 40 years, meaning it said you're not getting tired to throw, but there's a difference between immediate death and, you know, living out your life in a, you know, sort of pointless stroll. But I'm saying it is different, right? If someone came to you and said you're going to die tomorrow, that would hit you with a much more intensity than you're going to die in 38 years from now, right? I mean, that's sad, right? 38 years, you'll still be pretty young, but, like, relatively, right? And especially if, right, the modern equivalent in terms of lifespans would be you're going to die tomorrow or you're going to die in 60 years, right? You'd be like, oh, okay, whatever, so I don't live on the long end of things, but I'll worry about 60 years when it comes, right? Most people are dying in their 40s, right? Or whatever they're doing, so, you know, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.